You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me.
There we're going. We are on section 118 of Contributions to Philosophy of the Event. By Martin Heidegger, the title is The Leap, section 118, page 182. Shall we?
Is this episode 100?
I think this is episode 100, yes.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah.
I think that's called a milestone.
Yeah.
Developmental milestone or regress.
I was about to say there's like podcasts out there with like 4,000 episodes. Instead of a milestone, I'd say it's more of like a 6-inch stone.
Okay. 118, the leap, is the extreme projection of the essence of being of such a kind that we place ourselves in what is thereby opened up, become steadfast, and by being appropriated, come to ourselves for the first time. For the sake of an essential determination of being, however, must not beings indeed continue to play a guiding role? Yet what does guiding mean here? The delineation of being as that which in pre-given beings is their most general character would merely be something subsequent to the apprehension. The question would remain as to why and in what sense beings are for us. There is always and in advance a projection, and the question is only whether the projecting one as projector does or does not leap into the projected path as it opens up. Cf. The Interplay, the First Beginning. The question is whether the projection itself is experienced and endured as an occurrence out of the event, or whether that which gleams in the projection is merely set back into itself as the emergent. Physis idea. Physis means the self-emergent nature, and idea means form. In a self-releasing presentification. Did that make sense at all? Sorry.
I mean, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
And physis, self, what did I say? Self what?
Emerging idea or self-emergent? Self-emergent nature?
Self-emerging, and there's a semicolon. So...
Yeah, we talk about that. So it's nature, but nature is defined, either by Heidegger or the Greek, as this what the self-emerging,
yeah,
what comes of itself, what happens,
yeah,
of itself, that it's there, yeah,
yeah,
that makes sense,
yeah, okay,
yeah. The leap. So we're back to the leap. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the extreme projection of the essence of being. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So when you leap, you extremely project the essence of being. You shoot the essence of being out from you. So the leap is a generative act. Participates in the essence of bang. It's a timely, spacely, spacious event. It's the extreme projection of the essence of bang. So the essence of bang is projected by the leap. The leap has an active role in presencing the essence of bang, realizing it. The leap is the extreme projection of the essence of bang of such a kind that we place ourselves in what is thereby opened up, become steadfast, and by being appropriated, come to ourselves for the first time. So this is powerful, right? It's, yeah. This projection this projection of the essence of Bang is of such a kind that we place ourselves in what is thereby opened up. So we literally project ourselves out into the clearing that the leap creates, into the essence of Bang, the essence of Bang's truth. We become steadfast. We arrive there. We hold ourselves there. And by being appropriated, by being taken into the event, into Bang, we come to ourselves for the first time. Very, we've sort of talked about formulas like this. It's very, I would say, indicative of Heidegger's attempts to subvert the idea of identity. Identity comes to us through absolute relation, through sort of an a priori self-accommodation and the represented linking up of absolute essences. And this is a very different picture. This is, you have something here that looks like a self projecting outward into events, placing itself in what is opened up by that projection, holding itself there, being appropriated, so literally being taken in by another, and thereby coming to itself for the first time, which would seem to imply that as the self comes to the self in what has come to be called identity, it does not actually come to itself, which is indeed very true. Identity is the self destroying itself, not meeting itself, not encountering itself, save through the phantasm of the lie of identity. For the sake of an essential determination of Bang, however, if we're trying to make an essential determination of Bang, understand its essence, understand its status, its absolute truth, must not beings indeed continue to play a guiding role? Must we not, so if we're seeking Bang, projecting into Bang, must we still not go after beings, seek beings? Are we not being guided by beings? Are we not following beings into this opening up through this projection? Are beings still not leading us onward? Are we still not sort of mesmerized or reaching for what we call a being? And he says, yet what does guiding mean here? If beings are guiding us, what do we mean by guiding? The delineation of being as that which in pre-given beings is their most general character would merely be something subsequent to the apprehension. So that's interesting. So if we're talking about beings guiding us, then we have to apprehend beings. And to ascribe being, to say that there is being in pre-given beings, and assert that their being is their most general character, is something that would happen after the apprehension of the being. Does that make sense? So in other words, he's pointing out that the inclination in the liberal conceptual order is that we are seeking beings. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, actually, if we're leaping into Bang, then we're going to apprehend beings in that process. Mm-hmm. But ascribing being to those beings as their most general character is only going to happen after we apprehend them. So it's a kind of, it's sort of an afterthought. Mm-hmm. It's an after ascription. It's an after determination.
Yeah, as opposed to which is predetermining
exactly
and identifying
exactly. Instead of running on the assumption that there are beings there, we should be taking the leap into Bang, apprehending things, and then if we care to ascribe to what we see most general character that we call being, then so be it. But we would then need to sort of describe why we're doing that and understand what we mean by that phrase, the word being. The question will remain as to why and in what sense beings are for us. So, you know, we would still need to assess why and in what way they are for us. In other words, in what way they have being for us. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's a real fine analytical deconstruction of the experience, the ontological experience, in a sense, the ontoperceptive experience of interacting with beings, either with a preconceived and unquestioning notion of being as their most general character, versus interacting with, there might not even be a word for it, things that we wish to ascribe being to as their most general character, yet in that sort of subsequent, that post-apprehension assignation, we need to ask why and in what sense they are for us. And that would be a doorway to what Heidegger is trying to push us to do, which is to ask the question of being, what being is. There is always in advance a projection. So there is always an in advance a projection. So there's always, and before the fact, a kind of map or conceptual throwing or a formatting. All right, right? Mm-hmm. We understand that, mm-hmm, right? As we perceive reality, there's always a preceding mapping that's taking place.
And is that in the case of, like, the first beginning or the other beginning, that there's always this in advance of projection?
I mean, I think there is always a projection.
Yeah.
In
both.
Yeah, and in the situation we are in the state of consciousness that we are in, there is always an in advance of projection. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a question of what it's a projection of. Mm. And the question is only whether, and so here it is, and the only question is only whether the projecting one as projector does or does not leap into the projected path as it opens up. So I would say that in the first beginning, the projector does not leap into the projected path as it opens up. Mm-hmm. In the other beginning, the projector does leap into the projected path as it opens up. Mm-hmm. And that's only, I only say that because, as he says up here, the leap is the extreme projection of the essence of bang of such a kind, and by being appropriated, we come to ourselves. We place ourselves in what is thereby opened up, right?
Yeah.
So this difference between the projector leaping into the projected path as it opens up, or the projector not leaping into the projected path. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. That's a very critical liberal, post-liberal distinction. Mm-hmm. One senses in the liberal cognition either refusal or an inability or an ideological resistance to leaping into the projected path that the projection has, that their projection has created. In other words, what does it mean to leap into that projected path? It means to make yourself subject to your subjectivity, to establish a non-identitarian projection of yourself that then stochastically and existentially and temporospatially becomes a you that is not an identity, but is an encounter, is an event. You encounter yourself as an event. You accept your appropriation, you accept your positioning into the what's opened up. And in a sense, it's a risk. It's a, yeah. it's a, It's a fragmenting. It's it's the opposite of progressivism, I would say. It's the opposition of idealism. It's the opposition of utopianism. It's the opposition of liberal rulemaking. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely the opposite of identitarianism. So you're out there, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're experiencing the implications of your ideas. Mm. You're not shielding yourself from the repercussions of your ideology. You're actually subjecting yourself to your own ideas. Mm-hmm. You're understanding, you're living, you're analyzing, you're accepting the realizations of your ideations. And relating to them, and you're making adjustments based on them. You know, we talked a little bit about liberalism's inability to think outward through the causal implications of its ideas. Mm-hmm. Right? What will actually occur if this idea is brought to its ultimate conclusion? Liberalism is very allergic to that calculation. But this is even deeper than that. This is actually, you are going to exist in the causal chain of your ideas. You're appropriated by that causal chain, and you're literally going to encounter yourself there. So your ideas are not just abstractions. They're real. They have real world implications. They actually are yourself. Mm. The question is whether the projection itself is experienced, here we go, and endured as an occurrence out of the event, or whether that which gleams in the projection, the projection being experienced and endured as an occurrence out of the event is post-liberalism. That which gleams in the projection being merely set back into itself as the emergent in a self-releasing presentification is liberalism. Mm-hmm. So let's look at that phrase. What gleams in the projection? So what gleams in the projection is the identity, right? Mm-hmm. The light, the ideology, the power of the idea being held to its own energy and being obsessed with its own power, right? Mm-hmm. That gleams. Mm-hmm. And as it projects, it merely goes back into itself. Yeah. So again, very graphic image of identity. And it goes back into itself as the nature and the form, right? So it's literally like liberalism makes itself nature. Liberalism makes itself the form of the world, because it is constantly shining a projection outward into a mirror that shines it back into itself, because it is identitarian. Mm-hmm. In a self-releasing presentification, so in a self that releases itself, a self that's always releasing its presence.
Yeah.
Right? Not its non-presence. Right? Yeah. It's not appropriated. It's not leaping into the open space created by its projection. It's literally just in a closed feedback loop, a hall of mirrors. Mm-hmm. An identitarian hyperloop that holds it in itself, safe, powerful, right, and irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well done.
All right.
Yeah, the experienced and endured is quite a phrase.
Yeah.
Enduring.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
yeah, I just,
I mean,
yeah,
to, you know, to do, you know, if you're going to project yourself out into the opening created by your projection and be appropriated by the essence of Bang and the event, then you're going to have to endure something that you really don't know.
Yeah.
Something that you cannot project, in a sense. Project in the sense of predict the future, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to project yourself outward into what is projected, and then that's going to be appropriated and taken and almost taken away from you. Mm-hmm. So you're constantly losing yourself, constantly throwing yourself out beyond yourself. This is the post-liberal project of escaping the liberal stranglehold, right? That is identity incessantly masturbating to its own power. Mm-hmm. It's the attempt to be in the world, to bravely experience the living dying that we talked about, right? Mm-hmm. To let yourself be projected into the opening up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And thereby encounter yourself, actually genuinely. See liberals think identity is self-encountering self. Mm-hmm. But as I said, it's actually self-alienated from self. So this is what he's putting forward here is a recipe for self actually meeting itself. Mm-hmm. by subverting the identitarian occlusion that is the liberal mind war.
Yeah, the whole like mirror thing is also really interesting.
The what?
The whole mirror thing, the self on self, the sort of circularity of it.
Yeah.
The self-emergent, self-releasing is very, because again, you like hear those words and you're like, oh yeah, those are like nice.
Right.
Those are like nice poetic phrases.
About, right. Like, that's kinda, good. Isn't it's that good sort to of what we're looking for?
Yeah. But then you're like,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Well, and self-releasing presentification is interesting because, you know, he talks a lot about, the constant presence. Yeah. Liberalism is addicted to presence, mm-hmm. presentification, presenting oneself, representing oneself, mm-hmm. being present. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. if you're taking the leap and literally projecting yourself out into the opening up that you're, mm-hmm. that the projection creates and being appropriated by the event, mm-hmm. that's not presentification.
Yeah.
That's not the obsession with being present. Mm-hmm. That's actually just, you know, that's jumping out of the present.
Yeah.
And understanding yourself as something that is more than just a presence.
Yeah.
It's a projection, it's a history, it's a disappearance. Mm. It's the premise, the faith, the post-liberal project that the self can only encounter itself when it leaves identity and enters into a projected appropriation by Bang. Mm-hmm. And that can be very uncomfortable. It can be very scary. Yeah. It's very new. It's very unliberal. And liberals obviously find it very hard to be not liberal. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing they can't be without crumbling.
Can't endure.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like also a lot of like art theory words came up in this paragraph.
Yeah.
Like you had a really nice phrase earlier about being like somehow like being subjecting the subject or being, I don't know, some like alter version of like subjecthood, which was mm-hmm. really nice. And then also I always think with mirrors and stuff of art.
Yeah.
Reflection cameras.
Yeah.
I guess reflections. And I've often I tend to think about the reflection or the camera, the looking at myself in the mirror, the selfie as like a as a somehow, somewhat, perhaps, like, self-investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, as I, or, like, right, I will print images of myself and draw on them. So I think of that also somewhat mm-hmm. as self-reflective.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if any of it is at all. I mean, it's just sort of making me think, like, is it? Is there really, like, a relationship there? Is it just very surface level,
mm-hmm.
surface oriented? Is it just sort of what I think looks good or is pretty or kind of feels like almost in a dancerly way, like it's working? Like it just feels like the movement's working.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what art is. Maybe that's what visual art is. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just making me think, like, how is there a way in visual art that you can go beyond those things that are these visual objects?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems there's something about projecting, in outward, taking a leap, putting yourself out there, having your image be appropriated or appropriating your image,
mm-hmm.
does feel very art processy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, but those are very sort of different ways to think about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you let your image be projected, let it be appropriated, that's sort of a different way of thinking about it. Not to say that, like, the post-liberal-liberal distinction applies directly to, like, how you deal with the art object or image, but it's just it's just an interesting framework to think of it in, which I've never thought of it.
Yeah.
In the past.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it could be said, I mean, that in the art discourse now, there's kind of like, there's identitarian representation.
Mm.
And maybe then we could now juxtapose that to a kind of projected orientation or, you know. I mean, the liberal mm-hmm. orientation would be identity.
Mm-hmm.
The post-liberal orientation would be appropriation by Bang.
Mm-hmm.
The self encountering the self in the projection,
mm-hmm.
in the opened up space. But even maybe even more important is this idea that in the liberal identitarian art, selfie, self-portraiture
mm-hmm.
Space. I would say that beings are guiding the process.
Mm-hmm.
And often the being is a truer identity or an ideal identity or a desired identity or the viewers or the community or the value or the moral or of the, the moral of the image or the social problems being appropriated into the work or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But in the post-liberal projection via the leap of the essence of Bang, whereby one is appropriated and encounters oneself for the first time in the opening up of that projection, one is not being guided by beings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the seems to be the crux here.
That's like where we started too. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so, I mean, in your art, I mean, you know, well, let's just say that. Maybe there's a way to look at art and self-representation in art and say, well, there's the identitarian liberal approach, which is being guided by beings,
mm-hmm.
and there's the post-liberal kind of projection approach, which is only ascribing being to what is being apprehended subsequently
after the encounter.
Yeah. And in a sense, it maybe it's you know, I would say liberal self-awareness attempts to ascribe being to identity. Mm-hmm. Post-liberal self-awareness attempts to find the self and then attempt to understand what it means that there would be being, or that that relationship is, and what the being of that relationship is. So the liberal approach never quite gets to, and it's very high, in this book, the question of the being, of the identity that forms the essence of the art. Mm-hmm. The post-liberal approach is all about trying to understand the essence of the being that forms the relationship between the self and the self that is at the heart of the art. Mm-hmm. That is not an identity, but is a question-worthy a being event, aka bang. Mm-hmm. So one is trying to bolster identity. One is a self trying to find itself after being projected out of itself. Yeah. And, you know, can you grab two pieces of art from different artists and spot this? Probably not.
Yeah.
Maybe you can, maybe you can't. I don't know. But you can definitely smell it in what people say about their art, how their art is positioned, how their art is promoted, you know, what their art is, you know, what the people say their art is about, what they say their art is about. And maybe you can even spot it in the art itself. I don't know. Mm. You know, I mean, you talk a lot about, I don't know, like I would say in your art, whatever self of yours is encountering another self of yours, there's a lot of erasure, distortion, manipulation, appropriation, self-appropriation. There's a lot of this post-liberal, non-identitarian bang work going on in your work that feels very much is subsequently encountering things and trying to understand what it means that they are, because you are not dedicated to the hermetic manufacture of your identity. Mm-hmm. You're actually just trying to throw a self out there so that you might encounter yourself for the first time prior to, underneath, and after any kind of identitarian formatting that might occur, or either from desire or from the external, you know, discourse around your work. Like you feel that
there. I do think that's inherent in the work I make, and I think that's an interesting way to describe it, because I often feel like it's just sort of I don't know, like splattered paint, like it doesn't really, there's no real core or something, no theme that holds it together. And that's probably because in a way there is no identity. That's it's definitely not pursuing a identity narrative.
Did you just compare your work to like a Pollock you're talking about? No, I'm not saying compare it to Pollock.
Saying
it carries some it's of the same messy. Kind yeah, of stochastic yeah. and yeah. and spastic and experiential
yeah.
immediacy or non-immediacy of
yeah.
like a splatter painter.
Yeah.
Right, because your work
kind of splattering. Yeah.
Yeah, your work is ultimately the edited byproduct of a splattering process.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're obviously making choices, and obviously splatter painters are making choices too, but you're using mechanisms of generation, regeneration, copying, miscopying, you know, right? Masking, deleting, glitching, destroying, right? To try to come to some kind of output.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think has been a challenge of the work, because it doesn't have this, like...
Pish.
Yeah.
Who cares, right? Yeah.
Well...
Of course, yeah.
If you're trying to sell your work. Huh? If you're trying to sell your work, you
That's not what we're talking about, though. But I hear you. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
but,
of course.
It makes the work harder
to sell. Yes, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. That's a lovely way to think about it. I like that.
All right. So we keep
reading? Yeah, that's... Yeah. Whence the ground of the decision regarding the direction and range of the projection is the determination of the essence of Bang subject to arbitrariness, or rather to a highest necessity and thereby to a plight. But the plight different in each case, according to the era of being and its history. The concealment of the history of being. Cf. The resonating 57, the history of being and the abandonment by being.
Yeah, so whence the ground of the decision? So how what is the ground, what is the basis for how we decide in what direction and how far to project? Right? Mm-hmm. Like if we're shooting out, we're projecting out, we're throwing out, in what direction, how far, how do we come to those decisions? Are we just being random? Are we being strategic? Is the determination of the essence of being subject, are we being arbitrary, or rather, is there a necessity to what we're doing? Are we following some kind of mandate, some kind of need, some kind of law, some kind of project, some kind of goal, and thereby are we kind of living some kind of, you know, plight? You know, again, plight in this sense means, are we sort of serving some end, right? Are we just trying to fulfill some agenda that has been plopped onto us or that we have embraced?
Well, or is it the play of the abandonment by being? Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, well, that's what he kind of you know, I think wants to say.
Right, I see.
The plight different, and interesting here, he says the plight different in each case, according to the era of being and its history. So, depends on his answer is really, well, depends on who you are, where you are, what's going on with you, what's going on in the time that you're living, you know, different plights, there's different plights in different times, right? Era of being, according to the era of being and its history, how being is understood, the concealment of the history of being. I think that really means, you know, the plight. Your plight can be that the history of being has been concealed from you, hidden from you, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
In the other beginning, what matters is the leap into the fissuring center of the turning of the event in order to prepare the, quote, there, with respect to its grounding, and to do so knowingly, interrogatively, and by forgetting and by forging a style. Should I read the rest to the end?
Yeah, I mean, that seems clear to me. The leap needs to be into the center of the turning of the event. We need to go right into the event, heart of the event, in order to prepare the there, that is the, you know, that is the center of the event. With respect to its grounding, so we need to establish it, prepare it for its establishment, and we need to do it knowingly, questioningly, and stylishly. I like that.
Yeah. We can never grasp beings by explaining and deriving them on the basis of other beings. They can be known only out of their grounding in the truth of Bang.
Yeah, that's very important, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Liberalism is attempting to explain and derive beings from other beings. So it is really a regress. It's a useless regress. It's a logical circle. Mm-hmm. That's why Bang is so important. Whatever it is, I don't know what it is, but it's important because it is the external defining index that allows being and beings to be explained and understood, because there's something outside them whereby we can understand their measure, their status, their place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yet how very seldom do humans advance into this truth. How easily and quickly they make do with beings and thus remain disappropriated of being. How compelling is the appearance of the superfluousness of the truth of being?
Superfluousness. Yeah, that's an odd, yeah. Superfluous. It took me a while to see that that's what it is. Superfluousness, it seems like, yeah. But it's the superfluity.
Oh.
Superfluity, superfluousness. Yeah, I mean, superfluousness is a common word too, but superfluity is also another word we use. Mm-hmm. How compelling is the appearance of the superfluousness of the truth of being? So the truth of being, what he says here is you know, humans seldom accept that we can only understand being by grounding it in the truth of Bang. How easily and quickly we make do with beings and thus remain disappropriated of being. Without Bang, we can't really know or even relate to beings, and so we are disappropriated of being. The truth of being seems superfluous, right? Mm. And that seeming is very compelling.
I see.
So we are kind of tricked into thinking that this question of being, the truth of being, is just a superfluous question, and why would we even go there, and who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I would even say that liberalism is opposed to the question of the truth of being, because were the truth of being to be asked, liberalism would cease to be.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's not just that the appearance of the superfluousness of the truth of being is compelling, it's that liberalism is compelled to perpetuate the idea that the truth of being is superfluous, because were it to come to be seen as necessary or non-superfluous, then liberalism would begin to crumble.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think, obviously, in the post-liberal agenda, we want to understand the necessity of understanding, addressing the truth of being. We want to know being by experiencing and discovering the truth of Bang, right? We want to knowingly, interrogatively, and stylishly leap into the center of the turning of the event in order to prepare the there with respect to its grounding. We want to be allowed to speak and experience the world outside of liberalism's mind meld and liberalism's incessant refusal to let us think outside of its rules.
Yeah. Yeah, I like there are like a lot of active verbs, I feel like, here, mm-hmm. and in reaction to how to do that, like you just kind of listed them. But I think that like the things that you can do to try to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, I guess they feel very like active and what is it? Like they feel like, it feels like there's something you can do to try to be there basically. Mm-hmm. If you can kind of get like the energy or the, I don't know, the angle on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, should we, I don't know, talk about...
Yeah, is there anything...
Any implications for this reading?
Yeah, I think...
Implications of this reading, or...
It's the end of that section.
Whatever the phrase is. Anything on your mind that these passages seem to address?
Nothing comes to mind right off the bat. Do you have anything?
I don't know. I mean, it's definitely an interesting little treatise on, you know, how liberalism sort of plays with being or bolsters being or avoids being through its identitarian rigor, mm-hmm. and this looking into the leap and thinking about the leap, I think has a lot of a lot of implications for what post-liberalism means. I mean, if only that it's leaping out of liberalism,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Leaping beyond that that field, mm-hmm. which I think, you know, is kind of like, I would almost say that, like, I mean, I'm definitely like trying to leave liberalism behind, but I think that if somebody were to ask me what I really want, I would say, well, I want to be encouraged by liberalism to leap beyond liberalism, mm. in order to see what there might be, at least just, you know, as a thought experiment, as an inquiry, as research, as poetry, as a little risk, as a little, mm-hmm. as just a little adventure.
As opposed to damnation and excommunication.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. As opposed to just, you know, being condemned and canceled and erased.
Yeah.
And insulted and fired and everything. You know, I think that's kind of one of the most tragic aspects of liberalism now is its fragility. I hate to use that word, but you know, its fragility. It's self-defensiveness, it's protectiveness, it's very averse to research that might imply that it is not the be all and end all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there was some interest. There's an interesting case for the Supreme Court this week. I doubt you know about it because
I don't.
You don't. Yeah, you don't read the news. But I'll summarize it quickly. You know, it's I believe it's called it's basically, I think it's Trump versus Slaughter, literally. I don't know what slaughter refers to, but people have kind of joked about how that's a very apt name. Basically, the Supreme Court is answering the question of whether Trump as the president, or it's not really Trump, whether the president has the right to fire independent, so-called independent experts who work for the government. And this is just really like, is Trump allowed to fire scientists at the National Institute of Health, lawyers at the State Department, consultants at the Department of Energy, you know, all of these. Yeah. Is he basically the boss with all the say over the federal government, over the deep state? Is he allowed to gut?
Yeah, I was going to say, is that mainly like deep state?
Yeah, completely deep state. Okay. It's the hundreds of thousands of so-called experts who run the government, the bureaucrats.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been pushing to be allowed to fire these people. But of course, the liberals are fighting him tooth and nail. And so now it's in the Supreme Court. And it looks like he's going to win.
Wow.
Because thank God in heaven, we have a conservative majority on the Supreme Court at this point in history. We will probably not. It's another point in history, but we'll see what happens.
And then they'll just like overturn it? Or
I don't know. Yeah. But point being, Ketanji Brown Jackson, all the press has been about Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is the youngest and newest Supreme Court justice appointed by Biden, who apparently talks twice as much as anybody else on the court. So she's very engaged and verbal justice.
Sounds like a millennial.
She's like the millennial justice, yeah. And but she said a very curious thing. She said, you know, she said she worries that if the president is allowed to do this, that experts, independent experts, she calls them, would be replaced by loyalists to the president, and that would not be good for the country.
Right.
Now, I bring this up because, you know, what's kind of, there's two problems with what she said. One is that the Supreme Court's job is actually to determine what the Constitution says about any given case. Yeah. And asking what's good for the country, scientists who are loyal to a president or scientists who are ostensibly independent from the politics of the president is completely irrelevant to the question of the constitutionality of a decision. It's literally just like if there was a judge overseeing the proceedings, the judge would say, you know, you're not allowed to talk about that.
You can't bring that as evidence.
that's out of order. Mm-hmm. Whatever the phrase is. And secondly, of course, she is, I would say, so kind of vapid that she thinks there's such a thing as an independent expert who is not a loyalist to something.
Yeah.
She believes in independence. What she really means, but I think she's too vapid to understand this, is liberal experts versus non-liberal experts. So she is literally...
She's saying that liberal experts are
independent,
yeah.
And anybody else, obviously Trump would bring in, are just loyalists,
right.
Meaning they're compromised, meaning they're not objective, they're not independent, they're not actually scientists. Yeah. They're just shills, they're just pawns for Trump's agenda. She's drawing this distinction, which is so egregiously liberal-centric that to have that view as a Supreme Court justice is, in my view, just literally grounds for like your removal.
Yeah.
You're so vacuous. You're so unable to make non-ideological distinctions for the good of understanding the law, which is supposed to be a universally applied set of principles.
Yeah.
But she can't understand that there's no such thing as independence, because liberalism believes it is the truth, and anything that leaps out of it is just loyalty to falsehood.
Yeah.
A mistaken, corrupt, non-independent epistemology that is compromised at its very core, because it's not liberal. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I see here, is this kind of, you know, and that's the being that she refuses to question. The being she refuses to question is, what does it mean for something to be independent? Mm-hmm. If she were to actually be forced to answer that, she would not be able to. Mm-hmm. So she has to avoid the question of whether there is, and again, there's a being word, such a thing as an independent expert versus a loyalist. Mm-hmm. The being of those things is something she can't even, like, it's not even that, it's just like her brain, she has been, literally, her brain has been abandoned by being. Mm-hmm. She uses these terms without asking what they are, and if they are, and how they are, and how they might be different, mm-hmm. or the same, or just wrong, or, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see again and again, that's how liberals think. Mm-hmm. They don't think about being. They think in terms. They think in concepts.
Yeah.
They think in forms.
In beings that have been derived from other beings.
Yes. So, you know, it is an incessant beating on the brain with this kind of liberal, constant liberal perspective with shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wonder, like, it's funny, as you're saying all that, I was like, oh, well, maybe actually, like, taking a more sort of devoted or loyalist approach to the post-liberal project would be actually of value. It would be like,
what do you mean?
To somehow be more like, perhaps it's confidence or dedication or loyalty. For some reason, that word got me thinking it. To it, or I don't know.
Well,
but I feel like, I mean, if she's the one who's saying that, then actually maybe think, I don't know, maybe that's how she'd want a non-liberal to see themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you cut to the heart of like one of the deepest and most consistent criticisms that post-liberals make of themselves, you know, is that, you know, or conservatives really, you know, is that conservatives are trying to act on principle.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be independent thinkers, and they're trying to come to grounded, objective, nonpartisan, rational truths. And that inevitably is a handicap for them. It cripples them, because mm-hmm. politics is the practice of being a loyalist, mm-hmm. who's very good at asserting and proving in a court of law that they're an independent thinker.
Yeah.
But liberals start with loyalty and then create the theater of independence, mm-hmm. whereas conservatives start with independence and then fall on the sword of their fear of just being loyalists.
Hmm.
And so it's hard for them to accrue power,
mm-hmm.
because power is the product of loyalty. So,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, which is what you have in the deep state now. It's a giant liberal loyalist party that claims independence. And I mean, this is like Curtis Yarvin's main point, and conservatives are just way too quote unquote principled to play that game. Mm-hmm. So they lose incessantly. Mm-hmm. That is a big problem.
Mm-hmm. So, but then what's the, so then what would the solution be? Because is just more loyalty a mistake? Is it, or is more loyalty what's needed to beat the other side?
There's two views on that. There's three, actually. One is to continue to just be principled conservatives and lose and lose and lose, because principle is the most important thing, and I completely am completely opposed to that path. Mm-hmm. The second is to just be rabid loyalists, and that's what I would almost call identitarian conservatives, because they're just liberal conservatives. They're just kind of like, well, the liberals showed up with guns and and tear gas, so we're going to use guns and tear gas, and so you're going to have a complete, everybody's going to kill each other. And but the third is, I think, what we're doing, which is that, and this is very, I would say, indicative of the way Heidegger says that the other beginning needs to interplay with the first beginning. We must tirelessly, beat by beat, point by point, moment by moment, news item by news item, statement by statement from the liberals, deconstruct, analyze, point out the idiocy, hypocrisy, false logic, grifting, power grabbing, deception of, and just utter incompetence of their ideas.
Yeah.
Which is often just with liberals, it's often just pointing out that their distinctions are false. It's several things. Pointing out that their distinctions are false is a big one. Another one is pointing out that the implications of their policies, if brought to their ultimate conclusion, would result in utter disaster. The third is trying to uncover their motives, trying to show that their motives are actually brutal, decrepit and manipulative and self-serving, and that behind the propaganda, behind the shine, behind the verbiage, behind the systems, behind the institutions, is just an attempt to smokescreen, gaslight, and destroy others.
Yeah.
And you have to remember, again, everything a liberal says is a lie. So it's also just about incessantly calling out the lie and saying, that's a lie, and here's why. And this third route is it's a lot of work. It is it carries a little bit of the other two in it, but it's a little more, I would say, likely to generate, in my hopeful opinion, likely to generate a lasting upswelling and allegiance to the clarity of the project of post-liberalism. It carries with it some of that loyalty, because it is loyalty to the post-liberal project. It's definitely like, I am loyal to the post-liberal project. I'm not a liberal. I'm not going to play the liberal games. I'm loyal. I'm steadfast. I'm committed to it. And it also shows up with a little bit of tear gas and a couple knives. It's also like, oh, you want to, the gloves are off, we're going to fight, we're definitely fighting, but it's just about, it's about deconstructing liberalism in the right and smart way, so that, because it's all about how many people are going to come over to your side, how appealing are you, how compelling, how appealing, how truthful, how thoughtful are you. So that's what I would say.
That's very well said. That's all. It's all definitely, like, I also think a good perspective on how to think about thinking.
Yeah.
About anxiety and thoughts, like, that whole thing is, like, it all feels like it really maps onto that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, good night.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Choya podcast. For more information, visit leapingchoya.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.